Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. Yes, I'm your host, Ben Standing. I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic. It's Wednesday morning here in the DMV. Hope all are doing well. We're getting some better weather coming up here in the next couple days, it looks like. I saw it's going to be like in the 60s or low 60s on Friday, and I joked on Instagram that I may go lay out to bask in the sun, and I don't even know if I'm kidding that much. It's been not fun this cold for the last week or so, but the snow's starting to melt a little bit, so hopefully that will give way, is a sign of giving way to some better weather. Obviously, we are in sort of wait and see mode with regards to the Commanders' head coaching search, but plenty more to discuss, and I had the chance to talk today, or actually yesterday, with the Athletics football film guru Ted Wynn about what he sees with some of the main candidates, namely Lions offensive coordinator Ben Johnson, Ravens defensive coordinator Mike McDonald. I asked him, give us the lowdown. What are their offenses about? What are the keys? What should we be watching in this week's games against in the championship games? Obviously, the Ravens and McDonald are playing Mahomes and the Chiefs, and Ben Johnson going up against the 49ers. We also mentioned some of the other candidates, and I did ask Ted also, give me your thoughts on Eric Bieniemy. What did you think of the team this season? Is there any coordinator, based on where Washington is right now, is there a side of the ball or a coordinator that stands out for you? And I did have him pick, between Ben Johnson and Mike McDonald, who he would take. I think you guys will be interested in hearing that as well. So we'll get to all that here in a moment on the podcast. You can find the Standing Room Only podcast, where iTunes, Spotify, or anywhere you do your podcasting. Also, make sure to check out The Athletic. I had a story up this week about the 10 things that are on the to-do list for Adam Peters and this organization. Obviously, Coach is very much high on that list. That's the immediate topic, but there's a lot more to go, including filling out the front office. Once you get that coach, who's going to be the coordinators and the rest of the staff? I think questions about players are involved. John Allen, who are you going to bring back in free agency, and a bunch more. So check that out on The Athletic. All right, I do want to get to a couple of random topics here. Not random, but I mean a couple of random topics here regarding regarding the coaching search. So the way it is right now, as we know, there are the 7 candidates that Washington sought interviews with, along with Eric Bieniemy, who they met with last week. As far as the other candidates, again, you know this by now, I'm sure, but the 4 that are still in the playoffs, so that's Ben Johnson, Lions defensive coordinator Aaron Glenn, Mike McDonald, and Ravens defensive line coach, associate head coach Anthony Weaver, are all unavailable to meet with anyone until next Monday. Anyone who would advance to the Super Bowl would not be eligible to be hired until after the Super Bowl. So we'll see which of these teams advance. Obviously, the Ravens, at a minimum, will be the favorite are the favorites to win the AFC game. Now, they did have an interview reportedly with Texans offensive coordinator Bobby Slowick. That was supposedly happened on Tuesday. That was the in-person second interview, which is the round that they're at now. This week, Dan Quinn, Cowboys defensive coordinator, and Raheem Morris, Rams defensive coordinator, are also expected to hold in-person interviews with Washington. And then everybody else comes next week. Weaver would be on Monday, I was told. At least that is the current plan. You know, I feel like it would have been maybe, I don't know, fun's the right word, but like fun to have sort of a tracker, an odds tracker, a feeling tracker, something to the effect of where do we think things stand now. It still does feel that Ben Johnson is the leading candidate. I don't, like I said, I never really heard another name last time for the besides Adam Peters. There was some Ian Cunningham buzz a little bit, but for the most part, it felt like it was Peters to lose, and obviously it played out that way. He also, as we know, didn't even meet with anybody else. Whereas here, Ben Johnson, it still does feel like he is the leading person. Now, it's always, again, curious, are these comments, rumors that you hear a one big game of telephone, or are these things coming from a source of knowledge? I the team has been very quiet throughout this entire process, dating back to the Bob Myers hiring, obviously. So I don't know how much is getting out, but you start to see more and more people kind of going harder with the idea that it would be Ben Johnson. I do think there's been some a little bit more noise the last few days about Dan Quinn. We have yet to see where he's going to land. And Ben Johnson, look, he's going to get interviews all over the place. Let's just quickly go through the other positions around the league, right? Okay, so New England's got Jerod Mayo. That's done. The Raiders took the interim tag off Antonio Pierce. He's now that guy. They also made the hiring of former Chargers GM Tom Telesco as their new GM. Kind of a surprise, to be honest. I didn't. It seemed to me that it was going to be either interim GM Champ Kelly, Colts assistant GM Ed Dodds. Those seemed to me to be sort of the main targets, but Telesco, I mean, you know, he's got a track record. There's obviously some downside, but he's also got a lot of good players there for the Chargers. Brian Callahan is the new head coach for the Tennessee Titans. So the job's left open. You've got the Chargers. It feels like everything's pointing towards Jim Harbaugh, but because Jim Harbaugh's been a bit of a wild card on a variety of fronts, could he go back to Michigan? He's tried looking for jobs in the past couple of years, and teams have ultimately decided to go in other directions. But it does kind of feel like this one, there's a lot of legs to this story. So I'm going to guess that Jim Harbaugh ends up with the Chargers. Now, what does that mean? Now you've got Seattle, okay? This whole process is taking its time for everybody involved. But Dan Quinn was easily viewed as the initial front runner. Once Pete Carroll was reassigned in the organization, Dan Quinn was the defensive coordinator or the defensive backs coach for the Legion of Boom teams that were in the Super Bowl for Seattle. Obviously, the last game with Dallas was a mess, but he's generally viewed as a very good coach. He obviously was a head coach with Atlanta, got them to a Super Bowl. I also think Dave Canales, a name you've heard me mention several times, is somebody who should be in the mix there as well. Former quarterback coach with Seattle, worked with Russell Wilson, helped resurrect Geno Smith's career, did the same with Baker Mayfield this year in Tampa Bay as their offensive coordinator. So I think those two guys are ones that I'm looking at. The wild card overall is probably Mike Vrabel, the former Titans head coach. I don't really have a good feel for where he could land, if anywhere. It's hard to almost say, does he have a better track record than Dan Quinn? I guess it feels like it, but Dan Quinn, again, made the Super Bowl. Mike Vrabel got close, but did not quite get over that hump. But Vrabel's viewed as one of the better coaches in the league, so you would think that somebody would show some interest in him. Is that somebody Carolina? I don't know. They've also been on the Dave Canales train a bit here. They also have their own defensive coordinator, Evero, to consider. They just hired their internal assistant GM, essentially Dan Morgan, to be head of their personnel. By the way, what I loved about that, Carolina used the same search firm that the Wizards did when the Wizards ultimately hired Tommy Shepard, who had been in the building for like 15 plus years, and Dan Morgan wasn't there that long, but kind of the same deal. I do think Carolina is going to add some sort of VP of operations, Brant Tillis from the Chiefs or Alec Halaby from the Eagles, And maybe that's where the search firm came in a little bit more, but I like to think of it the other way. So in any event, but Carolina's also in the mix for Ben Johnson. Now, he turned them down for an interview last year. Does that, you know, is there enough money that can buy him to reconsidering them? I mean, we will see. Again, Adam Peters took no other interviews. Ben Johnson's been meeting with a bunch of people, also with Atlanta. You know, again, Bill Belichick, it seems like that was, things were heading in that direction, but Atlanta has, remained patient. But yeah, they could hire Bill Belichick, you know, once, obviously, yes, you have to go through the Rooney Rule procedures. I assume that they've done that by now, because it feels like they've interviewed a ton of people. But we'll see. I get the sense that Atlanta is sort of rethinking how it's all going to work down there. You know, they've already got an established front office with Terry Fontenot as GM, Kyle Smith as the assistant GM. Yes, that Kyle Smith. And Atlanta's roster has been pretty good, right? I mean, other than the quarterback, which is always the big deal, you know, they're much improved across the board, even though they had to go through some salary cap hell over the last couple of years to get to this point. So they're going to have to get a quarterback. Maybe they're the team that trades for Justin Fields from the Bears if the Bears go with Caleb Williams. We will see about that. But, you know, if Belichick goes to Atlanta, if Dan Quinn goes to Seattle, if Harbaugh goes to the Chargers, you know, that leaves Ben Johnson's options as Washington and Carolina. And again, unless the money becomes a huge deal, it just seems like, or I guess he could love Bryce Young more than he likes any of the prospects coming into the draft this year, then maybe that's something to consider. But, you know, it seems like the Ben Johnson thing, just based on the lay of the land, is positive for Washington. We will see how that plays out. Now, again, Mike McDonald, Raheem Morris, Bobby Slowick, all these other names are out there. Again, this is maybe my bias. I just feel like Slowick, you know, maybe ultimately he's not going to be viewed as somebody ready to go right now. And I'm not saying that McDonald or Johnson definitively are either. That's why these interviews will be so important. Again, can you go from coordinator to head coach? It is a different job. Can you be that voice that sets the tone, that gets guys motivated, that keeps them focused, and you got to hire the right staff as well? The staff hire is something I talked about in my story on The Athletic. So again, right now it feels like Ben Johnson, but I don't feel super confident as compared to with the Adam Peters stuff to a degree. But anyway, we will see where that goes. And again, we got to pay attention to these other jobs. Harbaugh and Belichick getting hired would go a long way towards narrowing this field. Until those things happen, though, it feels like everything else is kind of stuck, unless you're not looking at hiring one of the bigger names. Like, you know, again, the Titans went with Brian Callahan, who I think was pretty interesting, but wasn't a guy who was at the top of the searches for a lot of teams this year. Now, I mentioned Eric Bieniemy. Washington interviewed him last week. That report came out, and it came out earlier this week. Look, does it make sense for Washington, for their brain trust, to talk to Bieniemy? Absolutely. You know, unlike Adam Peters, unlike Bob Myers, he was here last year. You know, unlike Rick Spielman, Bieniemy was the one in the locker room. He was the one hired in February, brought in to help turn things around, not just the offense, but I guess to some degree the culture, that word again, right? And he was the one that got a close-up look at Sam Howell, at his growth, his development, his struggles, at Terry McLaurin, at the offensive line, you know, even to a degree on defense, right? Because in training camp, he's going up against them. He's, you know, obviously watching the team all the time. You know, how much were the struggles this past year on players? How much was it on the coaching staff, or on Ron Rivera, what have you? So it makes absolute sense to pick the brain of Eric Bieniemy. But in terms of the rest of it, making him a legitimate candidate to somebody I could see being hired, I just don't see that happening. You know, in terms of the actual job he was brought in to do the offense, it didn't work. we can sit here and you know, it's certainly not just on him. He was handed a quarterback who had one career start and was a fifth-round pick the year prior. And at the first half of the year, I think Sam Howell did a pretty reasonable job. I think most of us would agree with that. But overall, over time, he finished the league. He led the league in interceptions, was near the bottom or bottom, you know, quartile of a lot of different categories. And, you know, Sam Howell's struggles coincided with Washington's closing eight-game losing streak. The, you know, and then, of course, we hear, you know, we heard starting in training camp, some players were questioning his coaching, his teaching habits. We heard some more of those questions when the season ended. You know, I brought this up. I even asked Bienemy sort of midway through the year, have you adjusted your offense to coach this team, or do you find yourself still coaching, you know, running plays as if you were on the Chiefs? And I, you know, my stance has been Bienemy had one shot, basically, to get this done. He knew he was coming into a situation where it's probably a one and done. And what is he going to do? Is he going to adjust his offense? His real chance to call plays and to show other teams, hey, this is who I am. This is what an Eric Bieniemy team would look like. Or does he cater it to the players in tow? I believe for the most part, he did it to show off what his offense could be. There's no logical way that Washington should have been leading not just the league, but being the most pass-heavy offense in the NFL this century. They were tracking for that, as we know. So that is bizarre, right? And Sam Howell was getting crushed, as we know. Whatever the fault was, the offensive line, Sam Howell holding the ball, you know, they just kept putting him in that position for these things to happen. They should have, you know, in my view, could have easily run the ball more. You have Brian Robinson. You have Antonio Gibson. You have another interior runner in Chris Rodriguez. But, you know, these are the choices that they made. We also know Jahan Dotson's year was down. Terry McLaurin got 1,000 yards, but that's really not that important or impressive of a marker, to be honest. I mean, it's we get it, but it's not all that. You know, it's like 60 yards a game, give or take. So it's not that big of a deal, but, we like to put these certain big numbers out there for something. It's Terry's, no knock on McLaurin. I'm just saying it's not that big of a deal. So I don't see Bienemy being in the mix for a head coach. I don't see him being in the mix for an offensive coordinator. If it is a Ben Johnson, well, then definitely not. And even if it's a defensive guy, I just think this is a refresh scenario. You know, I'm not, we don't view Bienemy as part of the Snyder era because he really wasn't. But at the same time, you know, it's all connected to that. Move forward. And I would suspect that no matter who the head coach is, they would move forward with a different coordinator. Nonetheless, like I said, it's good to talk to Bienemy. I respect Bienemy's passion. I thought that when we meet with the coordinators every week, you know, every week the coordinators and with Rivera, and I felt that Bienemy, the passion that he showed with us from the start of the year was still there at the end of the year, despite the trying season. He was really into this. And I think that in the right circumstances, maybe that could be something that would work for a team and a staff. I just don't think here right now it makes sense. So I don't see Bienemy being part of here long term, but you know, we got to see how this process plays out a bit more for sure. And just last thing, you know, we'll talk more about the draft, of course, going forward. But there was some noise this week that because Mel Kiper Jr. at ESPN, in his mock draft, put Jaden Daniels, number 2, to Washington over Drake May. This is going to be the conversation we're all going to have for some time. If Caleb Williams is truly going number 1, then it really is Drake May against Daniels. May is more of the traditional pocket passer. He's got mobility, but he's more of that type, whereas Daniels was a dynamic two-way threat in it for LSU, took him all the way to win the Heisman Trophy. There's some concerns there just about his sort of standard passing, as well as the fact that at 6'4", he's a bit thin. Is if he's taking off the run as much as he does, is that going to be a problem? But Drake May's got some questions as well. So his last year kind of reminded me of some of it of Sam Howell, in terms of Sam Howell dipped off from his sophomore year to his junior year because they lost a lot of pieces. The story with Drake May, same thing, lost a lot of pieces. He still had really impressive numbers, but just a little bit less of a strong showing and didn't come up big in some of the bigger games. But again, quarterback's a dependent position. Is it all on him? There's a lot to like. So that's going to be the conversation I think we're all having between now and April. Jaden Daniels, Drake May, is, you know, assuming they make a quarterback pick at two, who will it be? All right, what I know now is it's going to be my conversation with Ted Wynn. Really excited for you guys to hear this. Like I said, I did my best to try to ask about what is a Ben Johnson offense? What is a Mike McDonald defense? Which one do you think makes more sense for where Washington's at? Which one do you prefer in general? And we got to talking about Bienemy as well as some of the other candidates as well. So here we go, Ted Wynn with me on the Standard Room Only podcast. All right, we talk a lot about these potential head coach candidates from the perspective of what could happen, what might happen, what are we hearing. But what's really important is, like, you know, what do they do on the field? What makes them so interesting? And to help us get through that, one of the best at breaking down film and not just doing that, but explaining it in a very smart way, Ted Wynn, one of our go-to guys here on The Athletic, at @FB_film analysis on Twitter. Ted, man, I really appreciate it. We were just discussing it as a busy time of year, so I appreciate you having a couple minutes to chat with us.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on.
Are you enjoying these playoffs? I mean, some years they're better than others. There's been some good games, but from your perspective, has this been a fun one to watch?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like maybe I'm just a football freak and I just like love every game, even in blowouts. I find things that are interesting, or you know, defensive standoffs. So I'm just loving it all. I feel like this year has been pretty interesting. You know, we just watched the Niners Cup. I just wrote an article about this weekend about how the winners of these games that made it to the championship round, they all had to like exercise demons that they've had in the past, or beat some old narrative that like they had in the past. Like Lamar Jackson had to beat the blitz to get past Houston. Kyle Shanahan had to finally break that streak of going 0-30 whenever entering the fourth quarter with more than a 5-point deficit. So I found all those things pretty interesting, and it's been an awesome ride so far.
One thing I find interesting, obviously everybody loves offense, I get that, but it feels like the defenses have held up a bit. Like, you know, Kansas City and Buffalo, it wasn't that crazy game a couple years ago where nobody can stop any offense. You know, the defenses held up a bit, and I feel like we've seen that in some other games as well. Is that me hoping for a more balanced game, or do you think there's something like, has the defenses pushed back to some degree this year?
No, they definitely have pushed back, and part of that is we had a lot of young quarterbacks this year, as you guys know, in Washington. I believe the average age of quarterbacks was as low as it's ever been. This year, we had a lot of starting quarterbacks go down. I think defenses have gotten better. The average points per game total is like the lowest it's been in at least 4 to 5 years, I believe. And some of these defenses are getting really smart with what they do and kind of combating offenses with aggression. And that doesn't necessarily mean just more blitzing, but simulated pressures, giving a look of a blitz. And Mike McDonald is one of the best at doing that. We'll talk more about him in a little bit.
Yeah, no, definitely, for sure. Yeah, no. Again, I wouldn't know about seeing better defenses this year covering Washington, but it seems like watch the rest of the league, it does seem some of that. Kansas City obviously seems like a great example. You know, we've known them for their offense, and now it's their defense beyond Mahomes that's really kind of leading the way. Since I've now made cracks at Washington a couple times, I'm sure they were not on your screens a ton this year unless you were interested in the opponent. But I am curious. Obviously, this was the year for Eric Bieniemy to get that sort of first shot to call plays full time. And, you know, the first half of the year, there were some good things, and then it kind of faded away. Did you get any kind of impression watching Bieniemy as to, you know, what he was all about? Was it sort of exciting to see him without the Andy Reid component there?
Yeah, but before I get into the offense, I will say I have watched a lot of Washington this year because I was interested in the opponent. I made a joke earlier this season that, what, like, you know, there's every defense has theories and ways of taking away a number one receiver. I feel like Washington did not have any plan for a number one receiver whatsoever, because every game, the number one guy always went off, like, no matter what. And I just feel like they would just refuse to double cover him or whatever, but it was just something you could always count on with Washington. But
AJ Brown, like, he really like took off. He had, yeah, when he was hot, he had two games he just absolutely crushed Washington.
Yeah, and then like Tyreek Hill had like four receptions for like 200 yards or whatever it was. But getting back to Eric Bieniemy, I thought he did do some really nice things with this offense. And working with Sam Howell, obviously, I think the I wouldn't say the jury's out on him quite yet, but I think things are moving in a direction where they might move on from Sam Howell. But he did flash a little bit this season, and I thought Bieniemy did some nice things with the passing game. But like Andy Reid, it's just he refused to run the ball, and I feel like Brian Robinson is a talented running back, and there's times they went away from him too much. But I think being a head coach is more than just play calling. Obviously, you want that from an offensive-minded coach. But I think in Kansas City, they really missed the guy that really held everybody accountable and be that kind of disciplinarian voice. So I think with Kansas City kind of missing that element, it kind of speaks to the type of leader Eric Bieniemy is, and that's one of the top things you're looking for when looking for a head coach. So I think he has that going for him where, he is a leader and people respect him.
He definitely has a presence. I mean, having, obviously I'm not in the locker room, but he's, every week we would talk to him at the press conference, even to the very end when it was like, oh my God, they've lost six in a row, seven in a row. Just with us, you could tell that the passion, the energy, the interest was still there. And I always feel like when you talk to somebody over the course of a year, they can't hide it. Like they at some point they're presenting who they are. And he always was the same in that regard. So I took that as to be a sign of, okay, I get the presence. I get why people gravitate to him and why he can be a motivator. The question is, yeah, the rest of it. What is it? Get over it? Does it get, too much? Does it get too much sometimes? Why, what did all these teams not see in him or see in him that that's prevented them from making him a head coach? Since you mentioned Hal, I'll just ask, you think there's some good promise there? I agree, but they also have the second pick. I don't know if you've even studied the draft, but a guy who might go two, the hype is going to be much higher. So the question was, Sam Howell, does he have the goods, do you think, to become like a top starter, or is that just not going to be in the cards for a guy like that versus like a number two pick?
I definitely think he has the physical tools and the aggression, and he showed signs that he can be this number one plus starter type of quarterback. But the inconsistencies and the taking the sacks, it's a lot. And he didn't definitively say, make Washington think that he's the guy. He showed signs of it, and they even went away from him later in the year. But he didn't take the reins and say, I'm the guy. There's no doubt about it. So when you have the number two pick, I think you have to take another shot at another quarterback and bring in that competition. And, that doesn't necessarily mean that Hal cannot be the guy. I mean, obviously, that lowers his chances a lot. But with that position and how important it is to get it right, I think you have to take multiple shots. And getting a number two guy, it's not going to be a really great competition between those guys, but maybe just they draft a guy like Jaden Daniels, maybe they want to sit him down for a year, let him learn, and Hal has another chance to play, and maybe he plays really well, and maybe they end up deciding to go with Hal and trading away the number two guy, or maybe Hal finds himself a job with another team and brings up his trade value. So I think you definitely have to take a shot, and Hal just didn't take the reins and make it no doubt for Washington to call him the guy and decide to trade away the number two pick.
So their roster's pretty open right now. Like they've got the most cap space projected in the league, other than like Terry McLaurin and the two defensive tackles, it's kind of hard to point to anyone and say that's like a real building block. So as we're talking about coaching candidates, having studied the team and paid attention, is there where you look at that and say, boy, they need an offensive guy, a defensive guy, or you know what, they just need that CEO motivator or leader of men type guy. And I know that's maybe harder. It's not, you need more variables than just simply watching tape. I get that. But like when you're watching, do you see kind of the type of coach you would think in your head you would want for them? Or is that overstated? It just depends on the person.
Yeah, I think, when you're looking for a head coach, you don't want to just try to find a coach that fits the roster you have right now, especially because you're rebuilding. Maybe that could become more into a factor. If you have a team that's ready to go, you might want to find a coach that kind of fits that roster philosophically with what he's done in the past. But like you said, there's so many directions this team can go that I think you just want to look for the best candidate possible. and let that coach kind of shape the roster with the freedom and roster flexibility they have. So, you know, in the past, I've always been a proponent of looking for an offensive minded coach because, you know, it's an offensive driven league. You want to keep that play caller around. You don't want to, you know, hire a good OC and have him leave to another team when the offense gets really hot. But I, you know, over the years, I think you just want to hire the best guy possible, find the best leader. And one of the most important traits you could have for a coach is the ability to put together an elite staff. So you want to really listen to that coach's plan and see if he has an idea of how to build that elite staff. And you have to do it over and over again because there's turnover. Like, you know, look at the Eagles, had two really good coordinators, lost those guys, did a really poor job of replacing them. And that's why they're in the position they are now.
Yeah, for sure. Are you an NBA guy?
I'm a fan. I would call myself a dumb fan of the NBA. It's a sport I just enjoy watching, you know, and not really getting too deep into.
Well, I just bring it up because right before we came on, the Milwaukee Bucks had a 33-10 record, fired their head coach for the first year head coach. Somebody was telling me he basically just somebody who covers the league that he's, I don't know, just not up to snuff for what you need to be. But that's like wild. Like as we're discussing this, can you imagine the head coach in the NFL having the equivalent of a 33-10 record and then being like, nah, you got to go?
Yeah, it's like if Nate Hackett, you know, was like 10-6 and got fired before the playoffs or something.
Yeah. Well, Jim Zorn started 6-2, and if they had fired him right then, people would have been like, "Wow, that's kind of weird." Then the next the 2 years played out in Washington, and people were like, "Oh, he wasn't up to snuff. He's got to go."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, so,
oh, go ahead.
Oh no, sorry. All right. So that said, let's discuss some of these guys. Obviously, my question always with these coordinators is, we get they can draw plays, but can they do the other part? Can they be these leader of men? So as we go through this, I'm curious, like, to whatever degree you think, but to start with Ben Johnson, I guess just give us the overview. What is a Ben Johnson offense as you see it? How would you describe it? What would a team be getting if they do hire the Lions offensive coordinator?
Yeah, Ben Johnson is that classic, you know, we love your offense. We want you to install that offense with our team and keep calling plays and have that play caller in place for the foreseeable future. But what the Ben Johnson offense is in Detroit is a very run heavy scheme with every run scheme possible. They run trap, they run zone, they run counters, they run creative stuff they just make up. So like your run game is going to be very robust, very diverse, and passing game wise, it's kind of a mix between Sean McVay's passing game. I think a lot of that has to do with wanting Jared Goff to feel comfortable and you know, have some familiarity there, and kind of a mix of Sean Payton passing schemes, and maybe that comes from Dan Campbell. But I mean, what I really love for Ben Johnson is just the creativity and willingness to try things that might blow up in your face on the field, but to his credit, those things have worked. You know, like he just runs some funky things like passes to linemen, or even that fake trap play with Penei Sewell pulling around and getting to the corner that they got a lot of yards on last week with Jahmyr Gibbs. I just love coaches that will try things, that aren't afraid to experiment. And we see that a lot from Ben Johnson.
I was going to say, it feels like on some level, like everybody has split the atom, but some people are just not willing to take full advantage of whatever that means. They see it, but they're too conservative for whatever the reason. Whatever it might be. Whereas like some coaches are like, oh, screw it, we're just going for it. Like Dan Campbell with all the fourth down and whatever plays, he's just like, I'm doing it. Is that kind of what you see with Johnson? Like he's just because he has that level of aggressiveness kind of helps separate him a little bit?
Yeah, I think that's part of the Lions' overall identity is they just aren't afraid. They aren't afraid to go for these fourth downs in your own territory with a fake punt. They aren't afraid to go for two, three times in a row. You know, they aren't afraid to just try things and just experiment with things on the field. And, you know, maybe a lot of that is Dan Campbell, but I think, you know, it's probably influenced Ben Johnson and what his coaching philosophy is going to be as he gets his own team pretty soon.
So he, you know, the Lions have been basically like a top five, top 10 offense the last 2 years with him. You just described sort of the broad offense. Is there a sort of a signature play perhaps, like when you say, boy, what Ben Johnson calls this up, you know, wow, this is like really top level stuff, or really kind of shows, you know, gives a good look as to how he thinks?
I think it's just very diverse. The run game is very diverse. I liked how they tailored the passing game to Goff. I wouldn't say there's a signature play, but they are very good at trap plays. Trap is kind of an old school play that not every team in the league runs. It's where you let a lineman go on purpose upfield, and hopefully you get them to kind of go upfield and try to stack the quarterback or get the running back in the backfield, and another lineman comes pulling from other side and traps him, and then you run right underneath them. So they're really good at doing those plays. But I wouldn't say there's one signature go-to play they have. You see a little bit of everything from them, which is what makes them so hard to defend.
So in this game against the 49ers, they're on the road, arguably the best team in the league and maybe the best defense. What do you see as the key for him from a play calling perspective or a game planning perspective for Detroit to come out ahead against San Francisco?
Yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of trap plays, like we just talked about, because the Niners are a very aggressive, single cap, upfield type of team. And those trap plays are going to be big because they take advantage of defensive linemen that are too aggressive. You saw one of their biggest weaknesses against the Packers. They just kept on hitting those crack toss plays over and over again. And the Lions are very good at those plays. So we're going to see a lot of that. But I think the key to Detroit upsetting the Niners or making it a very competitive game is just the run game. The Niners have been sneaky bad against the run this season. We saw that play out against the Packers, and Detroit is very good at running the ball. So I think that's going to be a key factor in this game.
Jared Goff, we mentioned him. Jared Goff, took was the quarterback for the Rams when they went to a Super Bowl, so he had some success. Then obviously it fell out of favor. Sean McVay goes to Detroit. He's resurrected things. How much do you give Ben Johnson credit for Jared Goff's growth, or is that overstated when we say the offensive coordinator is really helping out a ton with the quarterbacks? Because they obviously have a lot of coaches.
Yeah, I think a lot of credit does go to Ben Johnson. Like I said, he's really built this passing game around Goff's strengths and things that he's done successful in the past. But I think also a lot of it is just how much belief they put in Jared Goff. I think when he went to Detroit, his confidence was shocked. I mean, why wouldn't you be? I mean, your head coach gives up on you, trades you away. Nobody believes in you. And then you go to Detroit, and then these coaches really, take you under their wing, whether it's Dan Campbell or Ben Johnson, and just put so much belief in you. And they put the ball in his hands a ton. Fourth down, they're passing. 2-point conversions, they're passing. Third and 15 last week against Tampa Bay. A lot of teams will just run a draw or a screen to get in better punting position or field goal position. They ran three routes past the sticks and got that first down. So I think part of it is just believing in him with your actions and just instilling that in him. It's really built up his confidence to where Goff is really this kind of reborn quarterback now.
Okay. Let's go to the other side of the ball and then also the other game, the AFC Championship game, Ravens against the Chiefs. Mike McDonald, the Ravens defensive coordinator, is the hot candidate all over there. The Ravens, were bonkers this year with defense leading the league in tons of different categories, including fewest points, most sacks. McDonald's gotten a lot of attention, and I don't know that I'm not saying he's the equivalent of Ben Johnson for the defensive side, but in terms of a young guy, up and coming, all that kind of stuff, there seems to be a lot of buzz about him. What's a Mike McDonald defense? What does that look like?
Well, what Mike McDonald's done is he's turned a defensive line that doesn't have a real alpha as far as pass rushers into one of the best pass rushing units in the league. I think they lead the league in sacks and pressures. And, I think the number one guy right now is Jadeveon Clowney, who not a lot of people wanted. He was a free agent for a long time. And how he's done that is just through scheming. And his blitz rate is actually pretty low. I believe the Ravens are 26 in blitz rate or something like that. But people from the outside will look at it and say, be really surprised by that number because they think the Ravens blitz a lot. But what they do is they use a lot of simulated pressures where they're rushing four, but one or more of those rushers are coming from the second or third level. They're crowding the line of scrimmage, confusing protection schemes, and only bringing four, so they're still safe on the back end. So, what they're doing is just confusing the offensive line. They're confusing quarterbacks, and they're creating a lot of pressure that way. And I think the best thing I can say about McDonald with his head coaching candidacy, and to me, he's top guy. It's just everyone you talk to as far as Ravens players and coaches that have worked with them, they rave about his ability to teach. They think he's a special teacher, and I think that's one of the top traits you can have as a coach. He understands how players learn things and how they think, and he taps into that. And to me, that's a huge attribute as a coach.
Yeah, no, definitely for sure. There's been a lot mentioned over the last week or two about just how dominant the Ravens defense has been against even the better coaches and offenses in the league, against a Kyle Shanahan, twice now against the Texans. They really held CJ Stroud down, for sure. Mike Sando, I don't know if you saw his column this week where he broke down a bunch of aspects from the weekend, but and he showed some of that, like how dominant the Ravens defense has been. He seemed to suggest, though, that the way I read it was that when teams see him more, see the Ravens more and more, they get some more familiarity with them and they seem to have a little more success on the next cycles. Have you noticed any of that, or how have you seen teams adjust to whatever it is that McDonald's doing?
I did read his column and I saw that, but I didn't get a chance to go back and look for myself. But I think that makes sense because, like I said, this defensive line isn't uber talented. They don't have superstars on this defensive line. Medibike, their defensive tackle, is maybe the closest to an elite player on that defensive line. But a lot of it is smoke and mirrors, and a lot of it is tricking these protection schemes and that sort of deal. And I think maybe if you get a beat on it, then maybe you know how to beat this, or you have a better idea of how to beat this defense. So that kind of makes sense to me, but that also speaks to what kind of coach McDonald is, because he's doing this through scheme and not just relying on talent.
So obviously they're going up against Kansas City this week. Good luck against that with Mahomes. But obviously this hasn't been a vintage Kansas City offense, though. Last week they seemed to take advantage of Buffalo's kind of beat up defense. What do the Ravens need to do, or what does McDonald need to scheme to, have the Ravens get past Mahomes?
Yeah, I think the weakness with this Chiefs team is their offensive tackles, who just have not played very well. They tried to invest into it this offseason, but those investments haven't worked out very well. So if you could get some edge pressure on them, and you don't want to blitz Mahomes at a high rate. And like I said, the Ravens don't blitz at that high of a rate. But if you're able to make these tackles hesitant and make that weakness on the edge even more profound, then you have a good chance against this Chiefs offense. But in the playoffs, what they've shifted to is they are more of this heavy tight end set running team, and it's worked out really well for them in these last two games against Miami and Buffalo. And obviously, Mahomes is still making spectacular plays, but their run game and commitment to it has really made a difference. So you have to stop the run, and you have to kind of make this weakness from their tackles even more pronounced.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. So those are like the two guys that I don't know if they're necessarily the best on the offense or the defense, but they seem to be the ones getting the most attention. So Washington is also talking to Bobby Slowick and Eric Bieniemy. Is there either one of those guys you would take over if you were from the head coach perspective? Is there either one of those guys you would take over Ben Johnson? Is there anything that stands out? I'm trying to narrow the field and figure out who you're going to tell me should be the head coach. Either
Yeah,
one of those.
it's always hard when you don't get to talk to these guys and have an
Yeah.
interview process. You're just kind of looking from the outside, looking in. But to me, the top two guys are Ben Johnson and Mike McDonald. And I'm talking on both ends, both sides here, because I just talked about how your scheme and your production isn't the top thing, but it's the thing that we have to look at as outsiders,
Sure.
because it's very tangible, right? So when you look at what Ben Johnson's done, you look at what Mike McDonald's done, those are two top guys for me. Obviously, they know who Eric Bieniemy is. They have a lot of data on Eric Bieniemy. They know what the players think of him and what kind of leader he is. So they kind of have a leg up with that evaluation of Bieniemy. But also, there might be a sense that we want to put that old regime behind us. We want to put all these things behind us and just get this fresh start. So I think that he has that going against him. And Sorry, what was the other name beside Bieniemy? It was Bobby Slowick.
Right.
So with Bobby Slowick.
And also, just on the defensive side, Raheem Morris, Dan Quinn, Anthony Weaver, and Aaron Glenn, just to round out the field. Pick whoever you want. But yeah, that's the whole field for Washington.
Yeah, I think Raheem Morris is another really strong name that you have to take into consideration with just his experience and how much people love him around the league. And he's part of that Shanahan McVay tree as well. So we're not going to get too in depth with Morris, but I think he's right up there with those Ben Johnson and Mike McDonald, because I mean the Rams defense was 32nd in spending. They're expected to be one of the worst defense in the league, but they did some really nice things this year that people didn't expect of them. And just with the whole character and reputation of Morris, you have to put him in consideration. To me, I think Bobby Slowick would benefit from coming back to the Texans and being their offensive coordinator one more year. It's just, to me, it's just too fast of a rise. You know, he goes from passing game coordinator and with the Niners to offensive coordinator. He done some really nice things, obviously. But even Ben Johnson took another year to come back to the Lions. I think that benefited him as well. So I think for Slowick, he's going to be hot because everybody wants that offensive coordinator. But to me, I think he's a guy that could spend another year just grooming CJ Stroud and taking that offense to, even higher heights.
All right. And so just lastly, you said, and a lot of people have said this, it's sometimes just better to take the offensive coordinator if it's all things being equal, because then you're not having to replace that position all the time. If your offense gets going, you have that guy, and that's obviously where the league is headed. But you just mentioned a lot of nice things about McDonald as well. If those are the last two guys, just based on what you know as watching them call plays and however unique they are within the league, you get the final say. Which of those guys would you pick?
I feel like I don't know McDonald personally, but I've talked to a lot of people that have worked with him. So I think I have a little more data on McDonald and, just the things I've heard about him are just very high level. I think he brings, I think his defensive scheme is very unique, and the way he teaches it is very unique. So you have that aspect as well. So to me, McDonald's my top guy.
Interesting. Okay. A lot of fans who want the offense may not be happy to hear that, but I think it's, you look at the data, it's pretty hard to argue with what they've been able to do. And, when off, if he has, if they have a good game against Mahomes this week, I think that's going to make his perception wise, maybe not the teams, but perception wise, even higher. I know you pay attention to the Raiders. They just apparently hired Tom Telesco as their GM. So
see that. So you just broke that to me right now.
Well, there you go. Kind of a surprise one. Obviously, Washington has their GM, but I was paying attention to the league. I know he was being interviewed, but I wasn't thinking that's where they were going. So I don't know if you have to go work on that, but I will let you go. Anything to mention? Anything you've written already, or things you're kept coming up that people should pay attention for and look out for?
I just wrote an article about the divisional round and how teams had to just beat these old narratives that they had surrounding them to make it to the point they are now. And I'm going to write two in-depth preview pieces about what to watch out for in these two championship games coming out later this week.
Ted, I really appreciate the insight. Like I said, it's one thing for all of us to bloviate about what makes sense, but you got to pay attention to what it is they're doing, and you do it as well as anybody. So I really appreciate the time. Enjoy this weekend. I don't know if you have to do anything, like I said, with Telesco, but interesting fodder for you to play with, if nothing else. Thanks, man.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Many thanks to Ted Wynn for his time. Thanks to everyone here for checking out the podcast. More to come this week. We will have, who knows when news will break. I'm assuming that we won't get any head coaching news this week until Ben Johnson has played his game and or loses his game. And then if so, then maybe Washington gets time or gets on the head coaching train next week. I should mention, I will be at the Senior Bowl next week. I forgot to mention that earlier. So we will be talking about the draft in that capacity. And look, it's also a great place to get some NFL league-wide buzz. Everybody in the league is typically down there, at least like the front office scouting sets. There are some others there as well. So I would imagine Adam Peters gets down there at some point. Hard to know exactly how that's going to go until the coaching situation is done. Maybe it's later in the week, so they start off next week. with coaching interviews, and he goes down later. Presumably that would mean that Washington's staffers who are currently here would go down as well. And that's always interesting because maybe we'll see who, you know, what is it, who's down there representing Washington. Does that have any, give us any clarity as to who is sticking around here or not? All right, that's it for now. Ben Standick signing off. Until next time. See ya.